Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and you are here listening to the Mark Steiner Show that is made possible in part by the University of Maryland Heart Center, where expert cardiologists, cardiac surgeons, nurses, and support staff have built a nationally recognized program focused on prevention, treatment, and rehabilitation. For a virtual tour of the Heart Center, you can go to www.umm.edu/heart. And with Mark Steiner Show is broadcasting here from Baltimore, Maryland, live from WEAA. We broadcast our daily radio show on our local public radio station at Morgan State University, 88.9 FM. And we are broadcasting also live right now on Free Speech TV, Monday through Friday, bringing to you our ideas and thoughts for the nation, taking our ideas that we always thought were local, which really are national. Everything we talk about here affects the entire nation. When we're talking about addiction, when we're talking about education, when we're talking about race and immigration, all those issues, things that people in communities are fighting for and about across the nation, that take place in Baltimore, that take place in Bangor, Maine, that take place in Boise, Idaho, that take place in Seattle, that take place everywhere. So we invite you to join us here for this conversation. You can write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. You can also call us at 410-332. Oh, no, that's the wrong number, isn't it? 410-8888. 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888. And we're about to have a conversation with Woody Curry, who is the program director at Baltimore Station, one of the most effective drug treatment programs in the country, where over 80% of the people he works with are vets from many wars that fought in America, up to wars now from Iraq and Afghanistan. He's beginning to see veterans come in to his place. He's a man who has been through the cycle of drugs and addiction and war himself and has been a therapist working with men for many years now. And Woody, good to have you back in the studio. Welcome.
Thanks a lot, Mark.
It's been a while.
It's been too long.
Yeah, no.
Much too long, man. Mm-hmm. Much too long. 410-319-8888. Join us here. Woody, one of the things that really hit me, and I'm curious what all of our listeners think about this, and you. There was a piece written in the an op-ed piece, and in the Sun, actually, in the Baltimore Sun, and Furman de Brandebender, who is the head of humanities at MICA, at the Maryland Institute of College of Art, wrote the editorial. And one of the things he posited in there, he talks about the drug wars going on in Mexico, and saying the drug wars in Mexico that are just tearing the country asunder and destroying that entire nation are based on addiction in the United States of America. And there's a shocking fact in there that former Secretary of Health Califano had written in a recent piece, which was that the United States of America, with 5% of the world's population, participates in two-thirds of the world's illegal drug use. That was a pretty stunning and shocking statistic when I heard it. I mean, I was just blown. You said, no, you weren't blown away by it. I was blown away by that.
Didn't bother me. I see it. I mean, it bothers me, but first of all, let me address that first part.
Sure.
Mexico is a neighbor on this continent, you know, Mexico, Canada. Well, if you look at addiction, it not only affects the person that's using the drugs, it affects everybody that's connected with the person that's using drugs. So the same thing you see on a microcosm affects it on a macrocosm. It's the same process. Addiction is an equal opportunity destroyer. It's almost impossible for a person living in a house with a person that's using drugs not to be affected by the drug use. So Mexico being our neighbor, and also the thing about it is, as crazy as it seems, when I look at it in real time from dealing with it every day for the last 40-some years, you don't buy drugs from people that you don't know because you can't trust the quality. So the drugs you get, the addict and the dealer know each other. So Mexico is the cultivator of the drug. So where else are they going to sell it? And where? You can't have a market for drugs if you didn't have consumers. Then when you live in a culture where the whole purpose for living is to feel good by using whatever, money, property, prestige, ego, everybody's chasing a transcendent experience, and drugs give you that. Movies give you that. Religion gives you that. Okay, sex gives you that. It's a transcendent experience. It takes you out of the everyday reality of having to put in some hard work and delay gratification and things like that. We live in a fast society where everybody wants instant gratification, instant answers. So why is it a surprise that we are such a big consumer of illegal drugs?
So what is it about, do you think, about us, about the culture in America that is what you describe as this feel-good culture? I mean, what is it that fuels necessity to, not on occasion, which I think all humanity does, but to constantly feel you have to alter your consciousness to get out of the place you're in?
That's the way we were raised. That's what we are taught. That's the culture that we live in. Everybody wants to be whatever. Nobody's working on problems. Everybody's trying to find a way to escape from them by blaming everybody else. We're blaming Mexico. Mm-mm. If I was a drug dealer, I would definitely go to the neighborhood where people use drugs. There's no big deal. That's the way it works. There's something going on in this society that people just don't want to look at.
What do you think that is?
The nature of the culture itself. Okay, it's I read a book a while back called The Culture of Narcissism. Mm-hmm. And every addict is narcissistic, okay, in terms of thinking only of himself or herself. And we're a country of the pioneer, the lone gunman, the Superman, the rugged individualist. You know, we don't have a theme, so to speak. You know, Japan has a culture, and everybody in Japan, 99% of the people in Japan are Japanese. 70 or 80% of the people in Germany are Germans with a long history. Most of the people in England are English with a long tradition and a long history. What's in America? About 25 different cultures all interacting, and each one of those cultures have a subculture. What is the American culture? It's about profit, making money, streets of gold, living large, enjoying yourself. There it is. Those illusions.
So I'm curious what our listeners think. I'd love to have you join us from wherever you're listening to us from at 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888. If you have a cell phone, that's a toll-free number. So just make the call. Or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. 410-319-8888 is the number. We're talking with Woody Curry. He visits us monthly here on the air. Woody is program director at the Baltimore Station, one of the most effective drug treatment programs in our country. And he's been recognized nationally, a Vietnam veteran, came home from the war with his own demons and addictions, and worked with us on our Vietnam documentary series where he was featured in one of the hours with his story from Vietnam. Back in Vietnam, he was a warrior in Vietnam and also a translator for Vietnamese. So that was a story for another day.
Can't live that one down.
No, you shouldn't either. So you're talking about something that goes to the root of what we are as a culture that has kind of developed over the last several hundred years out of this capitalist culture we've developed in America that has created this world that we're in now.
Greed.
You think greed is at the bottom of all this, mm-hmm. or part of the root of all this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Everybody's trying to get ahead, get theirs, because being on top and being rich and being famous and all of that feels very good. It transcends everything. I'm the man. I'm number one. And everybody's striving to be that, you see. And drugs, the people who stand very little chance of getting there, and especially in times like these, all this stuff will come to the surface. Drugs are cheap. You can get out of the humdrum of everyday life for $10-$15. I need to say something about that.
Go ahead. Then we'll go to the phones.
All right. I looked at you. I read the article. $48 billion a year business.
Coming out of the Mexican drug business.
Yeah.
They make money on America. $48 billion a year. Right.
Addicts don't have that kind of money.
Really?
No.
Right.
Addicts, the drugs on the street, if it's 5% pure, it's overdose time. Addicts get high off of residue. $48 billion is a lot of money. Addicts go to jail for stealing nickels and dimes and selling dime and nickel bags of whatever. Okay, how many thousands of years would it take at that level to make $48 billion? Somebody's getting paid and getting paid big time. People who can spend money like that have that kind of money. And everybody is focusing on the addict. The addict is collateral damage. It's the cost of doing business. You get my drift?
I do get your drift.
Addiction is the cost of doing business. Nobody's looking at the business of drugs. Everybody's looking at what's visible, and that is the addict on the street and the ones that are fighting over nickels and dimes. That's collateral damage. Contain it. But we are not going to shut down the business. We're going to politicize it and argue about it, and it takes 25, 30 years of going back and forth. It was almost like Vietnam. You remember I said once before, I never got out of a war. I got out of that one, come back to this one, right? And the similarities are is that that's the only war. This one is almost as bad as that one because this one's gone on longer. When did we start the war on drugs? And the longer we stayed in it, the worse it got.
Well, yeah, I mean, the war on drugs is an abysmal failure. It's been nothing.
I know. It's a political statement.
Right.
It's a war on people, the addict.
Right. It's war on people, and as you said, addiction affects everything, everyone around you, and it's a war on the people who live in poverty in Mexico. It's a war on them. It's a war on this country where there were 2,000 murders in Laredo, this town right across the border from Texas.
Mm-hmm.
In a town that there was never murders before.
Collateral damage.
Collateral damage.
That happened during Vietnam, did it?
Yes, it happened a lot in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. We saw it. Did it. It's cost of doing business. Cost of fighting a war. Cost of getting an idea across.
Let's see what people think about this. 410-319-8888. Join us from wherever you're listening around the country. You can listen with watches here right now on Free Speech TV as we broadcast live from Morgan State University's WEAA 88.9 FM, Baltimore's public radio station. And you can see us on Dish TV and on DirecTV as well. On DirecTV, that's channel 348, and Dish, it's 9415, or log on to steinershow.org and watch us stream live. 410-319-8888, and I'm here. Let's go to the phones, and Ken, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Ken, welcome.
Nice to talk to you. I have a couple of thoughts about the conversation you were just having about the data that was stated that Governor Joseph Calamano.
Yes.
First of all, it seems to be unquantifiable that you could determine what percentage of illegal drug trade the United States had against a country, for instance, like Turkey or Germany or any other country, that you could actually quantify that. Which seems like a specious argument to me. And then let's say that it's a statutory or regulatory conversation or even a semantic conversation. If we decriminalize marijuana, for instance, what would be our status in terms of a ranking of illegal use, drug use, if we decriminalize marijuana? Would that not alone? That one step not alone drop our country in terms of a rating of illegal drug use by a significant number because of all the arrests we're as the gentleman was stating, you know, it's not the big dealers that are getting busted. It's the guy selling an ounce of pot on the street who gets busted. So I think that the conversation from the interdiction side doesn't match up from the regulatory side. You know, those things are in conflict with each other, the way the conversation that you hear both sides. And I'll just listen to your comments offline.
Ken, thank you so much. What do you have? Which one do you want to tackle first?
What, the interdiction side?
Well, let me just say, response to Ken, and you can jump in there, that I think that, to me, it's almost inconsequential whether the number is two-thirds of all legal drug use or one-half or one-quarter. Whatever that number happens to be, it's a big number that is fueling the trade in Mexico, destroying that country and bringing things into our country. That's A. So whatever the numbers are, they exist at some level. And just having said that, let me turn this over to you.
I agree with you, Mark. That's how we miss the problems. We sit around somewhere and juggle numbers and things
right.
like that and don't deal with what's going on right in
right.
front of us
right.
and turn it into some kind of academic discussion. And that's not really what's going on. Everything becomes academic. This is a real problem that's going on a daily basis. And what we want to do is form committees and study groups and all of this kind of stuff to figure out what's going on. Somebody's getting paid. And somebody's getting paid big time. And we live in a society where getting paid is what it's all about. And the cost of getting paid versus the cost and how many people are hurt by it is what I said at first. It's collateral damage. It's the cost of doing business. Nobody wants to look at the business of drugs. Okay? That's a big business that we're talking about. And you can bet your bottom dollar that the attempt is to regulate the revenue generated by the business, not to eliminate the business itself.
And when you talk about $40 billion a year, whatever it is that is coming out of Mexico in terms of cocaine and heroin and marijuana, whatever else being sold mm-hmm. across the border. Go ahead.
That's the cocaine and heroin that's coming out of Mexico. What about the heroin that's coming out of Afghanistan? What about the
right.
cocaine that's coming from Colombia?
Right.
You know, that's not even included in the numbers. You're just looking at one piece, so this guy wants to talk about numbers. Let's add those facts. Let's factor in the drugs other than what's coming out of Mexico, and look at what's coming out of Afghanistan now, and look at what's coming from Colombia and Peru, okay? Let's factor that stuff in, and then you're going to really see some big numbers.
Folks, your thoughts and what you think it all really means about our society and where we're going and what you think how we ought to address it. One of the things we're going to be covering on election night, by the way, from Busboys and Poets on our live broadcast there. We welcome you to come on down and stay with us from 8 p.m. to 2 a.m. down there as we broadcast back from Busboys and Poets with Amy Goodman in New York, is that we're going to see what happens to the referendum in California, the legalization of marijuana. That's a really interesting referendum. We might get into some of that in the course of this hour as well. Maybe something, I'm not sure if Woody and I are going to agree or disagree on that. We're going to find out in a minute. 410-319-8888. And let's go to Stephen. You're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Stephen. Welcome.
Hey, how you guys doing? I just had a comment about to the gentleman. I definitely agreed with the narcissism comment in that our society is, especially more and more so with things like Facebook and other new media coming out, that we're becoming more and more focused on ourselves in that respect. However, I wanted to kind of contest the greed. I definitely see that, but to a degree that it's a result of our society. I know it happens in our society, but I also know that it's been happening for thousands and thousands of years, you know, given how humans generally tend to act when they're given power. And I think that's one of the keys here, is that now with a more affluent society in general, you have more people with power. In the case of drugs, they have money that can get them that power to make themselves feel good, or they have money to get themselves the internet, to get Facebook, to make themselves feel good. So you have all these different things that you can get with that money, with that greed. But I think that greed itself is not something we can just pin and say this is something that American society is at fault for. It's not helping it, certainly, but this is something that's in us, basically, that is just being spurred on, I think, by the fact that we have these freedoms and the affluence that we do. And, yeah, I'll take my response off the air.
Thanks so much for your thoughts. Woody?
I'm not sure whether he was saying what or what's that's the bottom line. Drugs cost money, okay? And if you want to feel good, you're going to spend some money. And what you buy is not going to last but so long, so it's like anything else. The more you feed it, the more money it generates, okay? So one, you can't separate one from the other. You know, it's endemic in our culture, in our society. I mean, okay, when you talked about we have 5% of the world's population, but we use 34% of the illegal
drugs.
Some
say two-thirds, whatever it is. It's a
yeah.
huge number.
Okay,
it's
but then
number.
You got 5% of the population is controlling the wealth more so than the other 95%. So it's not too much of a deal. Where is the money coming from? And the people that don't have it have to entertain themselves or feel good some kind of way, right? Drugs. It's quick. It's easy. It's cheap.
And that $40 billion in just one country, Mexico, is not just sitting in somebody's mattress.
No. It's currency. It moves.
Through banks, mm-hmm. buying buildings.
Mm-hmm. Real estate. I'm not going to say it.
You can say it.
Political campaigns.
You said it. That is one of the things that David Simon got right in The Wire.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Nobody wants to talk about.
Of course not, because then we would have to take a look at who we are, and it's much easier to demonize a certain segment of the population and focus on the victim rather than the perpetrator.
410-319-8888. Woody Curry is back here for his monthly visit on The Mark Steiner Show, broadcasting from WEA Studios here in Baltimore, 88.9 FM, for Free Speech TV. And let us go to Gary. You're on the air.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Gary.
Thank you for taking my call. Mark, I'll see you on Friday.
Oh, good.
At 6 o'clock.
Great.
And as I listened, well, first of all, the main reason I called was just simply to give thanks to you guys for your hard work. I have a son in federal prison. Hopefully he only has like about another year and a half to go. And in the interest of brevity, I'll simply say this in response to what I feel coming from the discussion. Everybody needs to see Zeitgeist and Zeitgeist Addendum. And at the end of Zeitgeist Addendum, they talk about the Venus Project. The brother, you know, that was in Vietnam and had his episodes on the streets of Baltimore with addiction, et cetera. You know, friends and relatives like me losing my best friend in 1984 to that whole thing. You know, we have to envision a world where money doesn't even exist. And this is part of what happens at the end of the documentary Zeitgeist Addendum. They posit the world as a world where money doesn't even exist, that we don't have half the world's population living on $2 a day or less. We have a world where everyone's basic needs are met, food, clothing, shelter, education. And this is what we need to envision. We have to have the vision before it becomes reality. And a lot of people think that that's impossible, but then they say we would always sit at the back of buses. They always said that the earth was flat. So, you know, I want us to think big. And, you know, that's where my journey has taken me. And I'll leave you guys for now. And, Mark, again, I'll see you on Friday. You take care.
You too, and good luck to your son, who's probably in jail for what most men shouldn't be in jail for anyway.
More than likely.
You have any thoughts on?
Well, looking at that progression, the only way that's going to, we almost got there a couple of years ago, right? When the stock market and the banks and everything almost collapsed, we almost got there where money didn't matter anymore because nobody had any, right?
Even the money is an illusion.
I know, right.
Because I've told the story before. There's a man I know who's comes from a very wealthy family, and he's a very wealthy guy himself. And he had businesses in London. And he said to me, as we passed each other one day on the road just talking, he said, you know, my friends in London are screaming away when the crash first happened. We've lost half of our money. We've lost half of our money. And he looked at them and said, no, you didn't. It never existed.
Mm-hmm.
This money was built on nothing. We had nothing. It was an illusion. It was all paper. It was all cards. It did not exist as real cash. And that's an illusion. And it's just been perpetrated and built, but then we all suffer because of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it becomes easy. You take that stuff out of your wallet, have these little magic little plastic cards, and you're spending stuff that doesn't exist, except you're in debt for it.
Mm-hmm. Chasing Quixote Quest.
We're going to take a very brief break, and we're going to come back to all of our callers and Woody Curry, who's our guest here this hour, program director of the Baltimore station, on his monthly visit to the Mark Steiner Show, broadcasting now on Free Speech TV, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every day, Monday through Friday. And we will, and here, of course, broadcasting from our home station, our home for the Mark Steiner Show, WEAA 88.9 FM in Baltimore, Maryland, your public radio station, the voice of the community. And as we take this break, I want to remind you all that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com. We'll be right back to all of your calls. Andy, Tom, Clarence, and the rest, stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner here with Woody Curry, Clinical Director of the Baltimore Station. He joins us every month for these conversations on our society, addiction, and more. And we're broadcasting here, of course, from 88.9 FM, WEAA, the voice of the community here in Baltimore, and broadcasting across the nation on Free Speech TV. And you can also watch us be streamed at their website, and our website, steinershow.org. You can join us here at 410-319-8888 to join in this conversation, and let us go right to the phones again. Is that right, Woody? Let's see who's been on the longest. Tom, you've been on the longest. You're on the air. Hi, Tom. You still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Welcome.
Okay, thank you. You know what I think you guys are missing out on as far as the discussion? You have people that can go to their doctor and get mood-altering drugs from their pharmacist.
Right.
And this is never discussed, not only with you guys, but the media in general. In other words, I call it, it's called ethical drugs. But, you know, these are drugs that actually can kill you if you you watch some of these commercials on TV, what Big Pharma is dispensing. You know, they give you a long litany of how many ways this particular drug might kill you, or in effect put your health at risk. That's never discussed, and I don't understand it because, it seems like, well, the middle class is getting a pass on this because they can go to their doctor and get, look at a PDR, physician's desk reference. You've got, almost 100,000 different pills in there, and no one ever talks about this. Well, I guess, Big Pharma rules. Another issue is, as far as I'm concerned, is the only way you're going to stop this problem with drugs and crime and all of that is by legalizing drugs. Man has been using, as you guys know, drugs since time immemorial. So, the government, it's absurd for the government, this war on drugs, right? I mean, I'm 69 years old. I spent 7 months in prison because of 2 ounces of marijuana. In all places, New York City, believe it or not.
I'm not laughing at you. That's
just
absurd.
They gave me a year. The judge gave me a year. And when I looked at him, flabbergasted, he said, I could have given you 4. Now, it's so absurd. Marijuana is a great drug. I smoke it in a water pipe every night. And if you saw what I look like and how I can get around, I play golf, I'm active, I'm 60, I'm going to be 70 years old, and I look, the point being is that I think Big Pharma is behind this, as well as these crazy religious people, the same ones that are preventing, stem cells, right? The same embryonic stem cells they're going to discard, throw away, just get rid of. They won't let science do what they should do.
Tom, you raised some really interesting issues here. Let's wrestle with both of them. I think the first one you wrestled about the legalized Big Pharma drugs that come over, not the counter, but they do in some senses, but they come through your prescriptions that are dished out all the time. That's all part of this drug issue.
Oh, well, so is alcohol.
And so is alcohol.
Well, nobody mentions that.
Right.
Well, that's the reason why. There's no use in mentioning it. See, you got this thing whacked up, like Tom said, between what's legal and illegal. Okay? That clouds the picture. Oxycontin. you can get more money for OxyContin on the street than you can for heroin.
Now, OxyContin is a drug that's supposed to help you stop doing heroin.
No.
Right?
Mm-mm. OxyContin is an opiate.
No, but that's what they give you to try to get you off
No,
of
they give you the buprenorphine and...
Buprenorphine,
right. You got it mixed up.
Yes, I do.
Well,
that's
I told
why
you back
to
when that
out.
Came out that was going to turn into something that it did.
Right.
It morphed into, since people can detox themselves off of bup, they won't, you know. But the whole drug game is about money. You know, you're looking at... you jump from one drug to another, right? You change from the pencil to a pen, but you still got the same handwriting.
Another Woodyism.
Yeah. But you see, so that's how you get caught up in mm-hmm. the where's and why's of what it is and who it is and who's selling it and all of that. The bottom line is people going to get high, like the gentleman said. And that's the bottom line. Okay, they're going to get high. People have been getting high ever since time immemorial. I think the problem is that the business of drugs is where the violence comes from.
Exactly.
It's the business of drugs.
Exactly.
Not the drugs themselves. The drugs are going to be there, and they're going to be available by any means necessary. It's the business of drugs, and business and money and power are part of what we do.
And that is what changed the picture, which is one of the reasons why people think that if it was not, since we, well, let's talk about the last thing you said, then let's go to the other folks. A lot of people have called in. There's a full line of calls here, 410-319-8888, as we broadcast here on Free Speech TV at our home studios at WEAA in Baltimore. He talked about legalization. There's a ballot measure in California right now, which would be very telling. In terms of how it wins, if it wins, and by how much it wins, to the legalization of marijuana for personal use in California. And there's a lot of people who would argue, and I may be one of them, Woody, that would argue that the decriminalization or legalization of drugs and not incarcerating people for the use of drugs makes a huge amount of sense. We're not going to incarcerate our way out of this issue.
No way.
I mean, when people are ready to come and get off whatever addiction they're in, they'll come to places like yours when they're ready.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I do. I treat people who drugs has become a major problem.
Right.
So, obviously, $48 billion a year going to one country indicates that it's not really a major problem. It's a business issue. So when you talk about legalization, you're talking about the most cost-effective way of doing business and decreasing the collateral damage. I guess that's what how you would frame that. And the only way you're going to be able to do that is to legalize it. I'm not advocating it. I'm just saying with the present mindset and the way we think and the structure that now exists, you're not going to get rid of it. So you better find a way to live with it. I mean, it's just that simple. That's what it boils down to. You're not going to get rid of it. It's like the addiction itself. Everybody probably knows I'm an addict, and I'm not going to be able to change that. So I had to find a way to live as normal a life as I can with the fact that that's how it is.
You're talking about Woody Curry now?
Yeah.
Right.
And that's anybody that's
right.
been addicted to drugs. You learn how to live with it. You're not going to get a, you know, what I'm saying is I'm going to die with it, but I don't have to die from it.
Exactly.
You see
exactly.
You see different.
And that addiction goes deep in many places. I mean, mm-hmm. I say it all the time. I think it's important to say over and over again. We keep talking about people addicted to heroin on the streets of Baltimore and wherever other streets we are, in the streets of New York, the streets of Chicago, New Orleans, wherever we are. But in those same cities, in all of our communities, there are stockbrokers and lawyers and doctors and teachers and professors, mm-hmm. all of whom are not many of whom are addicted to the legal drug alcohol, and some also addicted to the illegal drugs as well. They're not filling up our prisons.
No. We have to put some kind of show on to show that we are trying to combat something that we really have accepted as a lifestyle. On some levels, if you can afford it and you can afford the medical care and you can stay out of the public eyesight, well, you demonize a certain part of the population. Isn't that what we do? We create a scapegoat. So, a straw man, and we beat the devil out of him, which is the addict. And like I said, I can't get away from it. Addiction is the cost of doing business.
Well, I want to come back to where we started the show in a minute, kind of a roundabout to the place that, in terms of what it is about who we are, that we get this place, and what, why we are crave the escape so much in this world. 410-319-8888. Let's see. I think it's Robert on line 6. I think that is the one that I can't see. That one. Robert, you on the air?
Hello, sir.
You're on the air.
Hello, Mark. I really appreciate watching your show on free speech.
Great.
It's kind of a strange thing. I don't usually call shows, but I'm home after a half day of work for the past 3 weeks now. And, you know, I mean, a half day of work, you get enough to buy some booze on the way home, but you can't pay your bills.
Mm-hmm.
And to Woody, I just wanted to say you are the man. You know my life. All right, I've been divorced 2 years ago over all this shit, and
we can't. The kind of language on the air is illegal. Is there? So let's go to. Sorry about that, but you can call back. We just can't use those deadly sins words because the station can be fined. We can't have that. 410-319-8888. Andy, you're on the air.
Doing today.
Well, Andy, welcome.
First off, I wanted to commend Mr. Curry for all the years of service he's put in. I know that's a tough road to haul, and sounds like he really knows his business.
He does.
I myself am 11 years clean and sober, and grateful to God and for people like him that do care about others and help others to recover. I guess one question I do have for Mr. Curry on his comments earlier about this feel-good society we live in, I totally agree. It's all about feeling good. It's all about everything's glorified, alcohol, drugs, sex, money. I guess my question would be if he would have advice for someone who has, like myself, a 16-year-old daughter who is exposed to all this glorification. And it's so much different from when I came up. It's a lot worse than when I came up. Kids today have so much peer pressure on them. It's crazy. In schools, I mean, sex and all that is just wide open. If he had a 16-year-old daughter, what kind of advice would he give her?
I'm glad you asked that question because people ask me all the time. I have four kids, and none of them use drugs or ever had any problems with drugs. And I know why. Because I talk to them in real time. I don't dress it up in philosophy or religion or escapism or anything like that. My kids can come to me and talk about anything that they want to talk about and in any language that they want to talk about. They let me know how they feel, and I give them real stuff. I talk to my kids straight out like that, okay? And none of them have any problems with any illegal drugs. My daughter's 20, and I have two sons. I have two daughters that I see all of the time, and I'm always around them. They come and visit me. They hang out with me. I hang out with them. We do things together. They talk to me about life in real terms, not about some philosophy or what I believe, but actually how it is and how they feel about it, and I'm part of their life. And they know that they can talk to me straight up and down about anything that comes up that goes on with them, and it's real talk. It's not instructions. Okay, it's how it is. And then they have a choice as to what they want to do, and thanks that they choose not to do certain things because, you know, we talk like it. I listen to the same music my kids listen to. Okay, I talk to my kids on Facebook every day in the same kind of language that they use. If they come on Facebook and say something that I don't necessarily agree with or something like
that, you're going to write
back. I'm going to write back and say, what's going on with this? You know what I mean. You need to be in school. You need to get some training. You need to get a degree. You need to make some money. You need to raise your kids. You need to pay your rent. And I don't want to hear a whole lot of stuff about all of this. And so I think the best thing you can do with your kids is to be who you are, you know, and be real about it and allow them to be real about where they're coming from. And I don't see that going on too much. People try to tell kids what to do. They don't have your reference point. So you have to create a reference point where you and them can meet and discuss things of that nature.
And we are at a dangerous point, I think, in our society when it comes to kids and drugs, because the age and numbers of kids, the age getting younger and younger, the numbers of kids getting larger and larger who smoke marijuana, who drink at youth, and what it does to you. Because I was one of those kids. I was 14 years old, and I was on the corner getting in all kinds of trouble, drinking like crazy. If I didn't have a backup behind me in the family that finally caught me as I was falling way down, I don't know where I would have ended up. But I think it's so destructive. But we're seeing it really kind of glom on and take hold of our kids, and that it's something that I think that is indicative of the increasing dilemma that we have in this country, and we don't know how to put our hands around it.
Because we're not being honest.
What does that mean?
Honesty and genuine go together. You know, no parent's perfect. My kids know I'm not perfect. My daughter calls me Mr. Crab. You know.
Does that have to do with you being a grump?
Yeah. But then I've heard her tell other people, well, that's just the way he comes across. But
right.
One thing about what he tells me, the way he tells it to me, I don't necessarily like, but it's true. Because I'm being real with them. My daughter, my son, my two daughters and my son, they come to me with stuff that they wouldn't dare say to their mothers and stuff. Mothers would ask me, well, how you know? I say, because they told me. Well, they never tell me anything like that. I say, they probably feel as though you wouldn't understand them. You know, like I said, I listen to the same music that they do because I need to know how they think. I need to know how they see the world. I need to know how they feel about things, you know, and that way I can relate to them. And I can be the parent and the friend at the same time.
But what do we do, or can we intervene in what's going on with young people and drugs and alcohol in increasing frequency in our society? I mean, men come to you late in life, mm-hmm. most of them, right? After they've been addicted for 10, 20, 30 years and say, okay, I've had enough. I got to get out of this. And they go through your regimen, which doesn't have any kind of drug use to get you off the drugs. You have to live in this place for 18 months to 2 years, and you deal with yourself and deal with you.
Mm-hmm.
But what about our kids? They're not at that place, but it's starting at an alarming rate.
People talk as though the kids just popped up the way they are. Kids reflect the culture that they came from. Kids' values are about money. They're kids selling drugs to get money. There are kids selling drugs to get money to get clothes. There are kids selling drugs to get money to buy sneakers. There are kids selling drugs to get money to have in their pockets. There are kids selling drugs to support families that don't have money. The whole value of this society is that if you want a better life, get yourself some money. And the way it's coming down is that we get money by any means necessary. We cheat on Wall Street, we cheat politically, we cheat on the street selling drugs. We do whatever we do in order to get this capital that we can use to make us feel better and to live better. It still goes back to the cost of doing business. Kids are raised in a home where they know that the misery or the conditions that they're subject to is the result of not having money or not having enough of it. That's the message kids get. That's what they hear the parents complaining about. That's what they see on TV. That's what they see in the movies. That's what they hear everywhere they go. That your unpleasant life is the direct result of you not having access to the almighty dollar.
And they see the corruption all around them on Wall Street, and nobody paying for that corruption.
Exactly.
Ever.
Didn't I say we get money by any means necessary?
Right.
So why do you think the kids would be any different than the parents or the society that they're raised in?
Woody Curry is in the house here this hour. Political director of the Baltimore Station, as we broadcast here on 88.9 FM WEAA here in Baltimore for Free Speech TV across the nation. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And we do everything we can to keep it real right here. And Woody helps us do that. Now let us go to Clarence. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Mark.
Hi, Clarence.
How are you?
Welcome. I'm well. Welcome.
That's good. I've been dying to ask this question of somebody like Mr. Curry. If I can take you to a 50 stores, you know, neighborhood stores, you know, run by different ethnic groups, and these are in-store open house drug places with drugs in the store, what does that suggest to you? Does it suggest to you, if the community and everybody else knows where these places are, what does that suggest to you, that that business license that derives a few dollars in taxes are more important than the community surrounding it? And, I mean, there's plenty of these places, and everybody knows where they are. You know, I'd just like to ask you what that suggests to you. If the police can't go in and shut down or be able to snatch a business license where they know that this behavior and these types of transactions are allowed to go on a daily basis.
Well, a store, and you're talking about these corner stores and these other places that's not necessarily corner stores where all of the goods are sold with the money that's earned by selling drugs. I mean, it's the cost of doing business. It's what I said earlier. It's the cost of doing business. What the police do. I was on my way here today, and I'm coming across Chase Street, and I'm late. And the reason why I was late was three plainclothes police cars and about six cops jumped out looking like SWAT teams and blocked off all of the traffic and stopped traffic. This is during rush hour. And when I got up to where I couldn't get past the police cars, the police were cussing out the drivers who were trying to go up the street because they had three kids sitting on the curb with the handcuffs on, the plastic handcuffs, and they had a squad of armed to the teeth, flak vests, combat boots, 9mm guns, three teenagers. That's the war on drugs. Okay? But the gentleman who bought the clothing store with the money that's generated from drugs, he's got a legal license to sell clothes. And if he makes a little money on the side selling drugs, it's all good because the money he makes off of the clothing and the other stuff goes into the tax offers. You cannot separate the capital generated from drug use and the activities associated with it from the economy. You just can't do it.
And, you said, Clarence, I think I always have a real hard time with kind of blaming and ethnic group for anything. It's mm-hmm. beyond all that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that stores, the cash economy fuels a lot of small businesses in America, especially in our inner cities, and that's fueled by drug money. We never want to talk about it. We don't investigate it that deeply, and that's where it is and where it's always been. Drug economy is a cash economy.
And you take illegal money and make it legal.
410-319-8888. John, you're on the air. Well, John, you there?
Very important. Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead.
This is some great dialogue on a very important subject. First of all, I am for the legalization of drugs, and my stand on it is just this. An adult owns his body, and as long as he doesn't hurt anyone else in the process, I think he or she should be able to do just about whatever they want. Now, problems are always created with people that are addicted to anything. And instead of spending billions and billions of dollars and destroying families by incarcerating people that where there was no victim, you know, it was just a business transaction, I think we've taken the approach completely wrong. And if you look at the economies of the drug industry, at the beginning of it is always a plant. It's an agricultural crop. And the reason a lot of these farmers, and there are many of them very poor farmers, the reason they're growing marijuana and coca is because our USDA has destroyed the normal market for corn and beans and wheat.
We're almost just out of time. What do you have, 3 seconds to kind of wrap something up? I mean, Evo Morales was a coca farmer. He's president of Bolivia now. Mm-hmm. Now he made that same point. Woody, I think we are out of time here. I want to thank you so much for being with us once again. It's always a pleasure to have you in the studio.
Thanks for inviting me, Mark.
And Woody will be back here to keep it real and kick it with us, I guess, sometime in the next month. Sooner than later, we hope. As we get out of here, I want to remind you, you're listening to the Mark Steiner Show here on Free Speech TV, here on 88.9 FM WEAA. You can watch Free Speech TV on the Dish Network and also on DirecTV, or you can stream it live on the web. I want to remind you as we go out that support for WEAA is provided by Mid-Atlantic Neurosurgical Associates, MANA, a center dedicated to those who suffer from brain, spine, and pain disorders. With 3 Baltimore locations, MANA's team of pain management physicians and surgeons provide a wide range of sensitive, compassionate treatment to improve the health and well-being of its patients. MANA patients, manapaincenter.com or 410-601-8314. Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Christina Arison and Justin Levy. Our engineer today is Zachary Coleman. Our intern today is Ashley Boddy. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, and find out about our guests and their work, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And for Free Speech TV, I'm Mark Steiner. Stay involved and take care.